Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Despite what their moms told them, they just aren't talented enough for radio. Unfortunately, anyone can have a show these days. Sean.
Well, I'm pretty hard to figure out sometimes. In fact, I can't even figure myself out sometimes, so don't you try to.
Joe.
You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
This is the Cuse Militia. Those two unapologetically biased orange-blooded homers, Sean and Joe.
It's the most bullshit thing I've seen in 30 years.
Welcome, Orange Men and ladies. Happy Sunday. This is the Cuse Militia with Sean and Joe. At Cuse Militia on the socials, go there, join the militia. What do you got, a bottle? Live on Twitter X spaces Twitter spaces. At some point, maybe. The first cardiac Cuse game of the season is a W. Quartier drops a three at the buzzer, assisted by Mintz. It was a great look by Mintz, a great catch by Quartier, quite honestly, and a great shot. And Miami heads back to the Sunshine with an L. And they led most of that game, and that must really suck for them to get beat at the buzzer. With the game tied 72-69, you'll hear from us and we'll hear from you in fan feedback. But just a couple things real quick. We meant to talk about Kevon Darton, who has entered the transfer portal. And, undersized guy who gave it his all the time. And he was quite impressive, actually. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, it wasn't really a natural look for him, but
hey, man, he started out as a damn walk-on.
And earned
a scholarship and became a starter. So, I mean, he's definitely going to get a look somewhere else. Yeah,
I felt like, I get things are changing, right? So,
Thing is, we're going down, we're playing different defense now, and you've seen some of the defense alignment that we've gotten as far as, you know, transfers like Fadil Diggs and, Some bigger guys, you know, Tank Wilson, you know, Deion Wilson, who's, you know, 6'5", 300 pounds. I mean, between junior college, and I think we just got another one, defensive lineman transfer from Alabama, who's like 6'4", 6'5", like 290, 295. So, I mean, we've already gotten three guys between transfer portal and junior college guys that are up near the 290 to 300, 6'4", 6'5", and those are the type of guys, you know, you want in the defensive line in the trenches, especially now that we're going back to a four-man front instead of a 3-3-5. So our defense is completely changing.
And Isaiah Hastings, he was the other news really since we last talked football. That was the D-line transfer from Alabama. So it's coming together. And I don't know where we're at with scholarships anymore. I know we were negative two at one point, but I feel like that's probably about where we're still at. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. So a big win for the unranked women's basketball team, who I would imagine be ranked on Monday, I would think. I would hope.
I mean, unless they lose this after, they're currently playing Pittsburgh right now.
Yes.
So.
I don't expect that to be a loss, but I will say that aren't both the men and the women's team are undefeated in the dome, I believe, currently. So,
yeah.
If everything goes well today against Pitt, I would expect them to be ranked. They beat Florida State. Was Florida State 7th or something like that? What were they?
I don't know. I know that they've beaten Florida State and they've beaten Notre Dame this year as far as ranked opponents. So
right, and Daisha Fair, but she was, I think, among 16 NCAA college women athletes who basketball players who have eclipsed the 3,000 point mark. So, and she was an integral part in getting that win against Florida State, coming back after how many, Joe? 18.
Yeah, I believe they're down 18 at one point.
Yeah. So shout out to them. I would expect them to be ranked soon. We don't really cover women's basketball because we barely have time to cover what we cover. So, right. Anyways.
Yeah, they're 15-2. They're really on a roll. They're fun to watch. I mean, as they get up and down. I know that people have their own opinions about, women's basketball and all that stuff. But I mean, they go up and down. They have a lot of depth like the men's team, and they sub out a lot of players. And Deja Fair, she's up there. What, 2, 4, 5? She's around like 11th or 12th now, all time scoring. Right in between Deladonna, and she just passed Maya Moore actually last week. Now, granted, she's got that extra COVID year, so she's got a little bit of a leg up. But it's impressive one way or another.
It is, but these past few years are the all time this, the all time that. All of that stuff, at best, has an asterisk on it. And that's for all sports.
Absolutely.
Men's, women's, whatever. I don't care. Because there's just so much of that going on that it's just not the way it was when, when we were kids, it was most likely 4 years, sometimes three in basketball, right?
Right.
Football was four. It wasn't, you know what I'm saying? It was just, things have changed so much. And with basketball, especially, because that's been going on a minute where, you get these guys who stay and you get the redshirt year and all this stuff. And then you got guys in teams that are capable of retaining talent like Baycott for 20 years, so there's a Miami player that's what? In his ninth year. Yeah. So. I mean, how do you get there? Has this guy got his doctorate yet or what? I mean, what's going on? So you add all of these nuanced things into to your collegiate career, and here we are now, and people are breaking records, unsurprisingly. But that's not to take anything away from anybody. I'm just saying that there's more opportunity there.
Right.
So anyway, all right. Okay, I did finally get a somewhat of a montage put together, and what Joe and I decided to try was to try to take this thing in chunks instead of playing the whole thing at once. So that's what we shall do. Here we go. Let's hear what Coach had to say following the big win. I think it was a big win against Miami. Here we go.
Yeah.
They ran it exactly the way I told them. Right when he came right out, I said, Judah, get everybody to get them to leave quiet air and throw it across. But it was a great game. It was an exciting game. We knew it was going to be a back and forth game. We just talked about not letting the runs get too big. Hence, I called more timeouts than I ever have called this game. Just trying to keep the game close because they're an explosive team. They can make shots. I know the big fella wasn't there, but I thought they filled in admirably. I thought we did a really good job defensively for the most part on their 3-point shooters. And they got going late, that's an experienced team. But I'm just happy for our guys. I thought they battled. I thought they stayed with it.
With a performance like this from JJ coming off another strong game against Pitt, what does this do for his confidence, for the rest of the ACC slate?
I hope it keeps his confidence up high and he keeps playing like that. But he's again, these last two games, he's been locked in. He's not hesitating. He's very confident and sure. He came off of, coming out of a timeout, came off a pin down and made a great lob pass to Malik. So he's just out there making plays. And again, I'm just happy. If I got Judah and JJ playing like that and everybody else filling around, it'll give us a chance every game.
So, oh no. Jeez. Forgot to start the main recording. Good thing we got a backup.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good damn thing. So JJ, when I was watching this game, I couldn't help but think, man, being a hometown kid, if we would have just got him and had him right from the get-go. I mean, he had some good games for Notre Dame, but, he struggled at times. But to be in on this team with the most of these guys who were here last year and to be able to gel and it's taken a little bit of time. He's kind of finding a shot. He looks good doing it. 60% from three. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that this dude's just firing off threes like this all of a sudden. In the last two games, what he's done has been, it's been tremendous. So Really happy to see him pulling that out. But I've got to say, man, I wish that shoulda, woulda, coulda. Wish we had him here last year too. So, you know, it's one of them things. It's like, well.
Well, yeah, and obviously, I think that's a confidence thing more than anything else. But you know, I don't know. I don't really care what it is at this point. Like the way that he's been playing with his confidence and shooting the mid-rangers and those three-pointers, and that's exactly what we need. It just is another player to stretch the floor. And yeah, I mean, I wish we would have had him last year too, but he's here now. You know, maybe it took a little bit of time to maybe get some cohesiveness with playing alongside Judah and trying to figure it out. But, you know, we know that this is a younger team with a lot of new faces and a new coach and a new, you know, just philosophy, the way they play. So I still don't think that we've seen the floor. We see these guys getting better and better, I feel like, every game.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the rotation is down a little bit, I guess. Well, I mean, McLeod's out, right? I did expect to see maybe Peter Carey in there. I feel like Malik got in a little bit of foul trouble early, but I was really hoping to see him get in there, because I mean, we really need a Peter Carey to get some more experience and get better. And yeah. I think if he can get into his own and kind of get into the rhythm of things, and that's going to be tremendous, seeing that we don't have a center going forward for the rest of the year. And I'm not the coach, and he knows way more than I know. So the more he plays, I think the better he's going to get. And, you know, it'd be nice to get another guy into the rotation, because we're at about 7 right now. I mean, Cuff comes in a few minutes here, a few minutes there, and that's about it. But the shot. So I did I say it to you, or did we say it during the show where we were talking about that, you know, we haven't had a cardiac game yet, and that this was a good one to pick to be a cardiac game, right? And yep. But it didn't disappoint, and it was right there the whole time too. It's like you could see this thing brewing at the end. And man, I just got to say, you know, he misses the shot. We go into overtime. Okay, we don't know what happens, but for Judah to be able to just be swarmed, get that pass off, and for Copeland to just grab that thing. I mean, that way he had to jump for that thing. And mm-hmm. land and square up and shoot while defenders trying to close out on him, and just swish the thing home, was tremendous, dude. I was so happy for that dude. I mean, you could see I think one of the broadcasters said, you know, he's got, it was Steven Dorff and Kevin, whatever his name is, got the biggest smile in the NCAA, right? Or on the team. But I'm right. telling you, that dude was just, you know, that's awesome. I was so, you know, guys like Quadier, you just, to see where he was and where he is now, and just, you know, you love guys like that type of character, that type of, that, you know, that gritty, freaking doing it all, the stuff that doesn't make the stat sheets, guy that keeps the bench going, cheering from the sidelines guy all last year. You know, you love seeing that dude get out there and hit a game winner like that. I mean, nothing compares to that. It was awesome. I don't care. I don't care who it's against. So, and look, you know, the crowd got loud. The crowd got loud when the crowd should get loud. I wish the crowd would get loud when they really don't need to, but that place was loud. Anyways, my point is I couldn't be happier for Cordier in that shot. And of course, Mintz was a part of that. Can't forget that. And lost in the mix. Obviously, Mintz was supposed to get that ball, and he just got swarmed. And that's on Miami. Because here's what I was thinking. They're just going to – Mintz going to get the ball and try to draw a foul. I mean, there's hardly any time left on the clock. I mean, he really let it run down. It was under 10 seconds before he started doing anything. And then I figured, go in, try to get the foul. I know, you know, it's tough to get that call. Refs don't like doing that, but it gives you a shot, and throw something up and see what happens. But anyway, it didn't matter, because he made the right decision off to Quadier, and boom. So that was awesome. All right, here we go. Let's continue.
Tough shooting day from Justin. What have you been telling him to keep him involved, keep him in the right mindset moving forward?
Keep shooting. Take good shots. Play, be aggressive. Sometimes it's not even a shot. Sometimes it may be a drive to get you going, get to the foul line, you know, see the ball go in. You know, we talk about that, but staying confident and just, you know, take your shots, you know, make your plays.
Taylor has been struggling. I mean, you know, yesterday, 1-for-5 from the floor, 0-for-4 from 3-point. And you mentioned the confidence thing with JJ. I mean, it's got to be. It's got to be it. I mean, we know he can do it. It's just he's not seeing it go in, and he's shooting a lot, and it's not boding well for him right now. I just think he's kind of down, and you know, we need him. You want to talk about stretching the floor. If you get Starling out there, Bell, Mintz, and Taylor all going, that's a problem for everybody. And yeah. And when Taylor starts, and I feel like Taylor will too. I mean, he's that guy. He's just not there. I mean, sometimes these things take longer to develop. I know he gets bagged on a lot online, which is, I don't think we should be doing that to our players. Like, to that extent, to some of the stuff that I've seen, I mean, right. Everybody's up for criticism, right? They're throwing themselves out there, but I mean, some of this stuff is a little bit much. I think he'll get there. When, I don't know, but the sooner he does, the more dangerous we become, obviously. So, with Joe, with not being able to hit the outside shot much, except for the last couple games, I mean, that's another, as we've seen the past two games, that's another dimension for Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that's helped him more than anything is that he has been one of the main, you know, stays as far as in the starting lineup and being a consistent rebounder. You know, he's played pretty good defense and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you don't know if it's like, again, it's probably a confidence thing, but then it's also, you know, you look who he starts with, you know, and you got Starling and Judah and Chris Bell. I mean, maybe he looks at it like, I'm just going to play defense and just be that, like, try to be that team player, that glue guy, not worry about scoring as much because they don't need me to score because everyone else can score. I mean, you never know what psychologically is going through a player's head, but I mean, we know he can do it. We've seen him do it. We've heard people talk about how good his shot is. So, I think more than anything, it's definitely confidence, but it's almost like he's trying so hard to just play defense and not mess up on defense and get rebounds. It's almost like he's almost like trying to hold on to his starting position. You know what I mean? I feel like he's pressing himself a little bit, and he's probably putting a lot of pressure on himself to do things he needs to do and not make the mistakes defensively so that he does continue to start. But, you know, to what you said, you know, if Chris Bell or Justin Taylor aren't hitting shots and doing what we need them to do and why and do what the reason that the coach has got them out there, then they're going to end up getting replaced by somebody else that just comes off the bench, you know? I mean, that's just the way of the world. But I think that his grasp on the starting position is getting a little bit smaller every game.
Yeah, well, I mean, 14 minutes, you know, that was Benny got 16, put it that way.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, there's going to come a time where it's the leash is been tightened up, and it's going to come time where it's just, you know, they're going to have to make a decision on what's going to be best. I felt like, speaking of Benny, I mean, you know, again, he played pretty good. It was for the minutes that he played, he didn't do too bad. I mean, he had 3 rebounds and assists, a couple points. He did miss 2 from the free throw line, which was frustrating. I was thinking to myself, man, I hope that doesn't come back to bite us. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I guess you don't want to blame any one thing, right? But, of course, free throws are just that. They're that one thing that can compound, and you could definitely look at it and say, well, if we had, you know, just a couple more of these, we'd have been good.
They're free, man.
They're free throws. Next.
Can you talk about how hard it is to come back in the game after sitting out a good stretch and then
It's hard, and I gave him credit, and I tried to give him a little warning. Hey, man, I'm getting ready to put you back in the game. Get your mind right. And he said he was ready to go. But again, that, we talk about that. When you're in the game, you know, obviously you're there. But when you get out the game, you got to stay in the game. You know, so, you know, I'll look at film. I think he stayed in the game. But when I came back to him, you know, he was ready to go. So I was very proud of him, especially, you know, like you said, sitting out that longer period to come in. And those were big shots. That was a big shot he made in the corner. That was a really big shot. So, you know, I'll just give him credit of just staying with it, you know, maturing.
Talking about Chris Bell there, he came in and hit one big one. There was a point there where we were just trading threes back and forth. And I mean, if you were ever going to say, well, this game's going to come down to whoever can make the most threes in this stretch of time at the end of the game is going to win, you would have just packed it up. You'd be like, well, it ain't going to be Syracuse. And they did, dude. They came out and they both teams got hot at the same time. You know, Miami's a much better 3-point shooting team than what they did yesterday. But again, Syracuse again has done a fantastic job with the man defense to come out and actually make a big difference on these extremely good 3-point shooters that, you know, and they had four of them. Well, one was out, but they had four guys three guys on the court at any given time that could do it. So, Chris Bell, I said, maybe it was a couple of shows ago. He's poised, dude. He doesn't get like flustered looking or anything. Like, his body language is really good. He just is. I think, I mean, it's a consummate professional, man. He comes off the bench like that and does what he does. That's awesome. It's good to see.
I mean, I think he's definitely matured from last year. If you remember, you know, when he got taken out, he had an issue with it. He wasn't great on the bench. People questioned his defense. They questioned his rebounding ability, things like that. And he still doesn't get, you know, crazy amount of rebounds, but we're not getting the same comments of just over and over again, him not getting a rebound in a game, right? To turn around this year and see, I mean, sometimes, you know, he struggles against some players. You could see, you know, last night or yesterday at the end of the game, he struggled with George, who went and took him to the hoop two plays in a row, which is why we turned around and again, coach made a really good sub and put Kyle Cuff in there. To kind of stop that. But yeah, man, he plays a lot more aggressive defense. We've seen him get steals, get open, you know, fast break dunks. And we've seen him now multiple games, but now two games in a row where he sits for a little while and then comes in and gets his number called near the end because we need him to hit a big shot, and he does. So definitely, you know, big jump between him, I think, first year. And it wasn't. It's not even really talent. It was more effort and attitude. Effort, attitude.
It was attitude.
And then if you know your attitude changes, and then you give more effort, and then that's where your confidence comes in, and that's where you see Chris Bell being able to do these things this year that he really didn't do last year.
If you are going to be part of a team, I don't care if that's a work team and the environment that I'm in at work or that you're in at work, Joe. If you have a team and you've got a couple guys with a bad attitude on that team, it brings everybody down. No matter how good they are at their job, it brings everybody down. It's a huge distraction. It's toxic and it's a cancer. And if you've got someone that's productive and it has a bad attitude, I would rather take someone that's less productive with an attitude like Quadir and help them develop rather than to stick with a guy who's got a bad attitude but can get the job done, right? And Bell has done a 180 on that because I would be willing to bet that a lot of us have forgotten about some of those run-ins with Boeheim coming off the floor, right? Walking away as Boeheim's trying to talk to him, stuff like that, you know? It's gone. And, you know, we could go ahead and split hairs on maybe when Boeheim should have retired. Or been replaced, or however you want to say it, fired. But you know, you don't know what you don't know until it happens sometimes. Right. And we, you and I, were Boeheim. We backed Boeheim, right? There's no question about that. And hated to see him go, obviously. But we always did question the how far apart that they really were talking at one another when Boeheim was talking to these younger kids. Like, what kind of, you know, they really needed someone that a little bit younger, a little bit more energetic to be able to lead them. And I think that could be a huge part of kind of what we've seen. That's why I was a little bit surprised at Benny earlier in the year. But look at Benny now. You know, we're not dealing with that anymore either, right?
Yep.
So, anyway. All right, last one.
The team has gone on great three-point shooting stretches, some poor three-point shooting stretches, and then these last two games they've really come together, had some of their best three-point shooting performances of the season. How do you keep them consistent in doing that, not just for this home stretch, but in the games beyond that as well?
Keep sharing the basketball. Keep sharing the basketball. I think, you know, the more the ball moves, you know, like anything, you know, defenses mess up. They, you know, they mess up anything. And, you know, you keep moving the ball, you know, the ball will find the right people. And I thought, you know, Judah made a really big play when he rose up. Everybody kind of was in the air, then he just kicked it out for a three. But I think you got to just keep moving the ball and knowing, you know, for those other guys, knowing that J.J., for Judah, knowing J.J.'s hot quad air, those guys knowing that J.J.'s going, knowing that J.T.'s, you know, out there, and knowing where your shooters are at. And I think that can help us.
22 threes in the last two games. Is that right? Yeah. It's pretty good. Obviously, yeah. Against Pitt, they were almost 59%. Yeah. And 37%, though, 37.5% ain't going to hurt. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
That's still up there. It's still good. Even though they went 0-for-8. To start the second half. If you don't go 0-for-8 to start the second half. Just think about maybe you just take a few less or something. You think about what that percentage would have could have been. But anyway, they're going to have to hit shots like that to win games. One thing I've noticed, I mean, in conference play is that it's a little bit more difficult for Judah to kind of get into his real game, which I think is why coach has given him the compliments on what he's done with his floor game in the assist department, 13 yesterday, and he's still scoring points, but he's got 8 rebounds too. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, if he's going to be a facilitator and he's going to score when he can and he's going to throw defenses off their game, you know, trying to draw fouls and stuff like that, you know, he only got to the line 5 times. But, you know, if he can't get inside, he's learned to not just chuck up threes, but to just find the open guy. And when you talk about coach sharing the ball, I mean, that starts with Judah. Judah's the leader on that team. He's going to be the one that's going to bring the ball up. And it's up to him to get that started. And, I mean, I don't know what a difference it's been watching some of this offense and defense this year. It's been a pleasant surprise. So, I couldn't be happier about that.
Look, I mean, 10 points but 13 assists. You know, I mean, usually he doesn't get those type of assists. 8 rebounds. He's close to a triple-double with 2 steals. And, you know, he hasn't really even shot that well these last two games. But coach is basically made a comment in the post game after each game talking about how, you know, these are probably his two most impressive games as an actual floor general and as a leader. Other teams, they know what Judah can do. And in the past, it's always been Judah kind of forcing the issue, right? Like he's going up, he's trying to get fouled. He hits the ground a lot. Sometimes he gets some no calls. They get the rebound and they're going down on a fast break, you know, where they have numbers and it doesn't bode well stopping the ball and helping our defense. And you've just seen a completely different, you know, player since that blowout of North Carolina. And, you know, you see J.J. Starling shooting a lot better. You see the ball movement being a lot better. You know, there's a couple times yesterday, Pittsburgh too, but yesterday, I mean, there was a couple times where I thought someone had an open three and they gave it up. I think Bell
did it yesterday.
He hit a shot, right? Yeah. And then he gave it up to J.J. Starling because it was an even better shot. So, mm-hmm.
And that ball came from under the basket. That was an offensive rebound, I believe.
I believe it was, yeah. So, I mean, we know what Malik brings to the table. You know, Chris Bell's starting to become a consistent, you know, force. And now J.J., you know, we talked about him. We need him to score, and he has been. You know, and then Benny and Copeland, and even when Cuff comes in, he gets good minutes. So we're starting to round that out. Now, obviously, you know, I'm right there with you about trying to get Hema or, you know, or Peter Carey in there and developed, because obviously there's bigger teams that we don't match up as well. So, but yeah, dude, I mean, overall, team's growing up and Mintz is playing great.
Smart.
But one,
he's playing smart.
Super smart. And the thing is with that is that all that's going to do now is open it up to where the next game, they're going to be worried about Starling a little bit more. They're going to be worried about Copeland a little bit more. And then it's just going to allow him to get easier shots. You know, he'll be able to get some more.
It was just like, it's like the swarming of Judah. It was almost, and look, this isn't an insult. I'm not trying to insult, but it was like, you watch kids basketball when they just swarm the ball and they don't know where to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, they panic and they just, you know, that's what that looked like. It was like, you know what I'm saying? It was like, they screwed themselves because they just all went for one guy. And instead of playing defense, they just tried to play kid ball, and it bit him in the ass. So, talking about the rebounds, you know, Syracuse, I mean, how many offensive rebounds did Pitt get? 15.
15. Yeah.
And Miami got 6. Syracuse did an awesome job on the boards, letting them only put up one shot at a time. For the most part. And that was something else that I don't think was in the presser and should have been, because, you know, we've in the past few years, that's been another point of contention, man. And we've seen it this year a little bit too, but I remember a few games last year, just like, how many chances are you going to give this team to score by not grabbing a damn rebound? So, you know, there was many times where I was banging my head against the table last year, wondering what the hell is going on. And I meant to be doing some of this fan feedback during these clips of coach, but we didn't. So anyways, let's do some now. How about that? At Cuseman14, great win and brought back good memories of a win in the dome. At Cusemo, Jimbo rebounding. These boys did a hell of a job on the glass. Yes, that's to my point. Excellent job. Only, you know, once I looked at the box score and the game is over, I wouldn't have thought that we were only +3, but we were only +3. But winning the battle is winning the battle, and it doesn't matter, really, by how much most days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any one thing could have went a different way for Syracuse, who trailed the overwhelming majority of this game, and it could have been ugly. So, and I'll say, you know, the free throw discrepancy. Okay. We win that again. So, and we're not usually on that side of that equation. We're usually on the opposite side of that equation. A lot of times, but we win that again, just, you know, with the fouls that they had some to give at the end of the first half. And, that's a good place to be. And coming out and playing smart in the second half too, just not letting them get any free shots, you know.
Yeah, and again too, I mean, there were some things that worked out in our advantage as well, right? You know, we didn't know that Omie wasn't going to play,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
And then with George and Wuga Poplar getting two early fouls, they sat majority of the first half. So there were some things that definitely helped us out, and still with that, you know, Nigel Pack and Matthew Cleveland had. Had hella good games, dude. I mean, they were. Matthew Cleveland did some stuff out there where he was looking like an NBA player, and at one point I thought Nigel Pack wasn't going to miss for the rest of the game. So
I thought Nigel Pack was going to be gone last year, but
yeah, well, surprise,
NIL pays, bitches.
but yeah, so that team, don't get it twisted. That team's good. They're better than what they played yesterday. And to be perfectly honest with you, I hope we don't see them again for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You know, and Coach Boeheim's point last year, Miami, wonder what they're paying him this year. They paid him a pretty penny last year, that being Pack. I'm looking now. Miami is still a 64 in the net. So they only dropped one loss against Syracuse yesterday. So
and you know, they didn't hit the transfer portal really at all this year. They kind of kept who they had and got some recruits coming in. So
well, they probably had all those guys on contract from last year, so they probably didn't have a choice. I love revisiting that to make Coach apologize about something that was absolutely true. Is just first of all, I thought he had more of a spine than that. He should have just got up there and said, "No, I'm not apologizing for something that's true." Everybody made such ACC Network. Everybody made such a big deal about that. It was so dumb. At Orange Up North, Q sure made up for not getting his shot off ahead of the buzzer at the end of the first half. Good point. I was like, what are you doing? It was the one dumb play I've seen, really. Like, if you're pointing out a dumb play, that was the one dumb play Q's had, like, all year. I mean, he's had some bad fouls and bad passes and turnovers and stuff like that. But that was one thing I couldn't...
I give him a pass because he got the steal, and Miami didn't get a chance to put one up.
True. He just... I don't know if he was watching the clock or he just didn't realize it. You could tell he didn't realize it. But
I think he thought he had more time. Yeah.
You know, what happens when a bench, you know, someone on the bench taunts you after that? Nothing happens, apparently. I guess it's okay. I mean, I'm fine with it if it's okay. I'm just curious.
I mean, I'm not going to assume, you know, because, I mean, let's be honest. We know quite a year Copeland chirps, too.
He does.
Yeah.
Him and Popper had something going on. Yeah. Yeah, they did. But apparently they probably played in Philly together was probably the end result of that. And when Quadir was at the line, they were jawing, but Quadir was smiling. So they may be friendly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's from the Philly area. They're both from the Philly area.
At Orange Up North went on a great game to watch. I thought the refs almost handed the game to Miami on a couple of key bad calls and no calls going down the stretch. Glad Copeland took it out of their hands. I didn't think the officiating was that bad yesterday, but I mean, there's always something, right, that you can point to. I feel like if anybody gets screwed constantly, it's Judah Mintz. And it's one of those things, it's like, you know, you've got a guy that constantly gets the whistle, and you know it becomes one of those things where human memories factor into a job, that being the officiating, and you know the whistles probably get a little bit looser when Jude is trying to draw fouls, and it's not how it should be, but I feel like that's how it can go, right? At David Super, after Pitt earlier this week and now this amazing performance versus Miami, I think the fans and the team has put the UNC shit show debacle behind them officially, moving on with momentum and confidence. Yeah. They haven't let a team really get them down besides the initial game itself. They haven't let anything hang around. So... I mean, gotta give them credit for that. They're resilient, and like this game, dude. They were down by 8 at one point. You know, they could have folded like a cheap lawn chair at some point in the second half, and they just didn't. They just fought. They fought and fought and fought. And I don't know about you, Joe, but for me, I was never really that worried. Even when I think there was two empty trips, one by each team. Before the buzzer shot, I really wasn't worried then, because I mean it worked out to where I felt like we were going to have the ball last, and there was something in the presser too. It was asked about, you know, something to do with how you feel about this team, and when it comes down to a last second or a last possession like that, because the shot clock was off, Syracuse had the ball. Joe, aren't you like extremely confident in this team, whether it is Judah trying to draw a foul and get up a shot or someone else doing something else amazing like Quadir yesterday? Like it was a little bit less, it was still a cardiac cue game, but it was a little bit less stressful for me. I think when it came down to the last like minute and a half, I felt comfortable about it. I really did. And I don't know why, but it's a different feel for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a time in the second half, knowing that, you know, seeing the what it was at halftime and knowing that Poplar and George had barely played, and then there was a little stint there in the second half, somewhere around somewhere after the 10-minute mark, halfway through, where, like I said, Pack was just hitting everything, and I think I want to say they got up to like a 7 or an 8 point lead at one point in the second half, and I did actually start to get a little nervous because I thought that they were starting to find their rhythm and we were struggling to hit shots, but I think that's around the time when there was a couple bad calls, and then Autry called Chris Bell's number to come in, and he hit a big shot, and then Starling hit a big shot to get it close, and then it kind of took that away. But I thought for a second there I was a little nervous because it looked like all those guys were starting to figure it out.
I totally agree. We got our boy here. Let's see what our boy's got to say. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Patrick.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Very loud and clear. Very loud and clear.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, so... Hey, great game, obviously. Okay, you guys probably already talked about it. Here's what I think. Have you guys looked at the net rankings and how messed up they are?
I kind of noticed a little bit, but I didn't really think about it because I feel like every year I'm a little confused by it.
Well, I mean, you got Michigan State, which is, I can't remember, like 11-7, and they're in the 20s. And I don't know what their strength of schedule is, but I don't think it's as high as ours. And something just seems off. And I'm not saying that it's some conspiracy against Syracuse in general. I just think that, like,
you think
got, like, some formulas off or something. It's ridiculous.
Do you think that I'm getting over being a cold? Don't make me having a cold.
Hey,
don't make
too.
Me laugh. Don't make me laugh.
Me too.
I think it was the flu because there's guys testing positive for the flu at work, and I had something last week, and I can't laugh. If I laugh, I might die.
It's funny. Okay. So let's try to make them laugh, Joe. It'd be funny anyway.
Okay.
Joe's not funny though. That's the thing. So.
Fucking hilarious.
There it is.
Patrick, cut it out. All right. So look, what was I going to say? Oh, leave it up to the. How many times have we said leave it up to the NCAA to ruin a good thing, right? So they have this quad system put in place. It seems like it should be a basic algorithm across the board: strength of schedule, wins, losses, home, away, neutral. And you look at it, and it's made by human hands, and the algorithm's human. But by God, you should be able to look at this thing and determine who all is going to enter the field of 68 or 64 plus 4 in by looking at these numbers, right? And now we're how many years into this are we? And you're right, it kind of looks a little weird. We don't really know really what is going on. At one point, this whole thing was explained, but now we're so far separated from that, and you've got, dude, it's corrupt.
Hey, I lost you guys.
Did you? How about now? There you go. Can you hear us?
Oh, we're back.
Yeah. How much did you miss? I don't know what happened.
Not that much.
He's okay.
Okay.
30 seconds.
Okay. Well, I was saying that you're gonna have to go back and listen. But basically, what I'm saying is that we are far removed from the start of this thing. And the NCAA is corrupt, and people are corrupt.
Yeah.
People in power are corrupt, and that power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? And that's what you have. So when you talk about, well, things look a little bit different this year, past couple years in the net rankings, and I don't understand anymore. There's always going to be some questions, but to your point, it's just corruption. I think. I mean, when it comes down to something visually that you can look at and see like that, then there's probably is a problem. And I don't think it's a Syracuse thing either, Pat. It's just it's one of those things where's the money flowing? Follow the money. Who knows? We'll never see the money.
No, yeah, and we spoke about this net ranking stuff too, and realistically, we know that it has a lot to do with where you start in the rankings. If you're up in the beginning, And especially if you play against some good teams, like, you don't fall that far, you know. So if Michigan State, which again is probably, I know for a fact they have some ranked opponents in the non-conference and then definitely ranked opponents in the Big Ten. So if they're playing against teams that are ranked ahead of them in the net and they lose, they're not going to fall that much. So, and then it has a lot to do with, you know, how many times you lose as well, which is why you see someone like a team like Princeton, who's 13-1, all the way up in the 30s, right? So it seems a little flawed, and just like anything else, it's not perfect. But you definitely get an advantage in the net rankings if you start up, obviously, higher. I want to say we started up in, like, the 140s, 150s or something like that in the beginning of the year.
You know, I wish I checked,
Joe. Yeah, Joe's right. We did, and that must be some sort of contributing factor. You would think that by the end of the year, though, that would change, right, because they would get rid of the new – I don't know. I don't know how it works.
So yeah, I think it eventually kind of evens itself out, but
well, look at a team like Oregon jumped like 30 points in one game.
It's because they beat some scrub team by a lot. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Texas A&M is 11-7. Okay, LSU beat the absolutely living crap out of them 2 weekends ago at Texas A&M. I'm looking for LSU, and I'm searching. I'm looking through the 70s. I don't even see him yet.
90s.
Goodness. Is it not? You said 90s? Yeah, yeah. 90. Dang. They have the same record.
93.
As A&M.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they... yeah, I don't know.
It's not a good record. A&M,
A&M, I think, started pretty high because they were preseason ranked... maybe top 15, top 20. So it must be based on where you started. It's almost like college football. Huh, interesting. Thinking of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say VCU is ahead of LSU. And Syracuse is up to 69, which I feel like that's right around where they should be. I think they should be ahead of Pittsburgh, who's 68.
I'm looking at that too.
It doesn't make much sense, but
no, Pittsburgh just beat Duke at Duke yesterday.
Oh, they did win that game?
They did?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
So so Syracuse beat Pitt twice. Does that mean Syracuse beat Duke
too? No, I don't think that's
no. How that oh damn. Okay. I was watching that game, and what happens when I click onto a Duke game is like they'll be down, and then all of a sudden they'll start to come back. So I looked at it, and they were down, and I switched off of it, and I never went back to it. But I forgot to check it because I just assumed they were going to win because Pitt sucks.
Yes.
So anyway, so where did Duke go? Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was going to say I fell asleep the other night thinking Clemson was going to beat Georgia Tech to find out they lost in double overtime when I woke up.
Duke dropped 5 spots from 14th to 19th.
You kidding me?
Losing at home to Pitt.
That's what I mean. Like, you'd think that they'd probably lose, drop farther, right? But
10, 15 maybe? A loss to Pitt at home? Pitt sucks.
That's why it takes a while for those teams that start on the top to fall.
I mean, what's their strength of schedule like?
No, who knows?
You can go to those old RPI or whatever it is sites to figure out strength of schedule.
Yeah, we used to do that, Joe.
Yeah, then I just stopped giving a shit.
Syracuse is 1-5 in quad one, though. 3-0 in quad two, 3-0 or 5-0 in
undefeated
three and
outside of quad one.
Yeah. So, but I mean, the 3 quad two wins I thought was more than that. I think one must have dropped out, but anyway.
All right, I'm looking at Syracuse has the number 3 strength of schedule.
In based what? On, the ACC?
Out of everyone. Purdue has number 1, Tennessee has number 2, and they're 1-2 in the RPI, and then Syracuse is 10 in the RPI. This is old, though. I don't know if this is right.
This is 2020.
No, it says 2023, 2024. But, yeah, I think this website's old. That sucks.
Well, it's a good point Patrick, it's something to definitely keep an eye on, I think. And we hadn't really been. You know, I look for the teams we're playing, and I look for us most of the time, but I don't get into comparing. But, you know, when you have, like, the Duke thing, I don't know. I just would like it explained again.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I used to, we used to have the definition, and it was pretty convoluted to begin with. It was muddy anyway. And then, you know, here we are years later. I can't remember how long we've been doing this. It's been at least 5 years, right?
Is that yep, something like that.
Yeah. So, all right, Pat, what else you got?
That's it, man.
All right, man.
Hopefully we get some offensive line recruits. Let's go. We need some big boys up front.
Let's go. Why don't you look up and see how many scholarships we got left?
Oh, I have no idea. That's even more complicated than this.
It is. All right, brother. Well,
yep.
Take care, man. Stay in touch.
Hey, great win. I'm sure you guys were happy like I was.
Yes. Great,
yes, sir.
Great win. Great game. It was awesome. Take care, man.
Yeah. See ya.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, let's continue, shall we? That turned into a longer conversation, and rightfully so. I feel like it was needed.
It's about time we start talking about it anyway, right? It's our introductory to it.
Huh? What?
It's our introduction to the net rankings from here on out since, you know, we haven't really spoken about it too much.
Well, we give net rankings and we speak about it here and there, but to keep an eye on it like that, no, we haven't. I mean, I guess we're just going to have to. I would like to see if there's any new, you know, reporting or anything on it like that could explain a little bit better. It's just one of those things that you're never going to get the answer that you're looking for. So you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, we can look and see, but if they want to not give you information, they're just not going to give you information.
Yeah.
And they could say whatever the hell they want. Let's be honest. They could even tell us what we want to hear. You got anything on Facebook? At No Blanchard 44, amazing game. However, I did love how our offense played today. I don't love how our offense played today. Kind of like Boeheim's live and die by the three philosophy, but a win is a win, and I hope all the football recruits in the building had a good experience.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, I'm sure they were probably enamored by the atmosphere there, and during a basketball game is even something, especially if you're up in the stands and looking around at how much of that stadium you actually got filled up. But
yeah, 20 grand.
20,000?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I figured it'd been a little bit more.
Yeah, like, yeah, pushing 25 maybe, but
I would have liked more anyway, so.
At this time of year in ACC play, you should be pushing 25. I mean, 30, you know, you're talking, that's a ranked team coming in. That's a, maybe even a Friday night or Saturday night game or something, you know, but
yeah,
25, it should be expected at the dome during ACC play with this team playing the way they are. I think
on a Saturday.
Anything less is disappointing, but
yeah,
with that said, 20,000 people is a lot more than many other places are pulling in, even ones that have the seats. And, you know, there's a lot of places that don't even have 10,000 seats. So, you know, I'm happy for that. Like I always said, though, man, I mean, the one thing Syracuse basketball is missing is their own venue outside of the dome. Something smaller, something, you know, 25,000 seat capacity, freaking monstrosity that can just rattle your eyeballs when it gets going. It'd be ultimately frustrating for anybody there. And, you know, the dome gets loud, but think about how much louder it could get if it was closed off. You have all that empty space in the back during a basketball game. That's a ton.
Go ahead.
Take over.
I was going to say, I got a bunch of, bunch of comments about the cardiac cues. You know, my brother said you guys did bring up that it has been a different year with no cardiac cues in the last podcast, and then they give us one. LOL, great game. Our dome was rocking today. Amanda needs to tighten up on free throws, but that's also probably the best we've done in threes all season. Haven't needed the old cardiac cues defibrillator in a long time, so made for an exciting last few minutes and epic game finish. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of comments speaking about the cardiac cues coming back and just how great a buzzer beater is, obviously.
Cardiac cues coming back is only great when you win, right? I mean, you know, so I'd rather like defer off of that. I would rather have a clean win or a clean loss sometimes. But yesterday wasn't too bad. Like I said, I felt like they were handling it well. They never... You know, there wasn't like sloppy turnovers towards the end of the game, which you see a lot. Syracuse only turned the ball over 8 times. That's really good. And if I'm not mistaken, most of those came in the first half. So they did a tremendous job of taking care of the ball, and they were really, really careful with their passing, and they were getting defensive rebounds, which was huge. And Miami didn't even get an offensive rebound until the second half. So, you know, like I said, though, earlier, one of those things goes a different direction. And you said Amanda brought up the free throws, 10 for 15. It's not great. I think that Syracuse is a way better free throw shooting team than that. But if you have a couple or one thing go way another way, rebounds or the foul discrepancy, if Miami gets to the line more than 5 times, you know, it doesn't even come out into the last shot. We just lose the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said before, when I spoke of, you know, us not thinking or not even knowing that Amir was out and, you know, having two of their starters out a big chunk of the first half, we were lucky to get out of there with a win and still be undefeated at home. Miami is a good team. So, again, it's still kind of in my mind stuck in a place where still don't know how good we are. To me, that's more of like a home game. Miami's more comparable of an Oregon team. And again, we played Oregon where they were shorthanded. We play Miami a little shorthanded. So again, a win's a win. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to be a blemish. No one's going to say anything about it. It helps our resume, but I still don't know how good we are.
I mean, I think we're that good. We're beat Miami at the buzzer good. That's how good we are.
Yeah,
it's a tough call, but I think we should be able to hang with any ACC team except for these ones like the Dukes and the North Carolinas. I mean, I really do feel like that. I feel like that Syracuse can give anybody a run for their money. So, you know, they're just not there with those blue blood teams. And that's disappointing, but you know, you've got Wake in the mix this year, which is odd too. And
Wake Forest is doing quite well,
right? I mean, Wake Forest is doing a tremendous job. NC State's up there, and then you still got Florida State up there, which is you know, because they we'll get into it, but
2 next games are huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyways, you got any more?
Yeah, on Facebook? Yeah, so I got I got 2 more. Our boy Zach should have definitely won that game by 10 at least. Terrible shooting. I'm not sure many were watching the same game as me because the defense is the only reason we won the game. Side note, Devendorf should call more games. He was great.
Yeah.
I think Anda says tell Sean to stop eating hot dogs with ketchup.
Yeah. Damn. Who said that?
I'm just joking. I added that.
Yeah,
boy Zach.
What was I going to say? You totally sidetracked me.
Devendorf called.
Yes.
Me.
Okay. So look, I liked it. I liked it. You can tell that he's got that orange bias a little bit. It's probably a little frustrating for people, but, you know, there was one whole broadcast that he was, calling with someone and he just kept saying us. And, you know, you got to imagine that if you're the opposing team fan and he's talking we, us, and he's calling the game. I mean, thankfully, he's not out there in a striped shirt, but still, it could be frustrating. I mean, think Corey Alexander. Like, golly. I mean, does it get it more agonizing than Corey Alexander, who was supposed to be there instead of Eric Devendorf yesterday? So,
yeah, I know. He, like, stepped in. He didn't even know he was going to be on there. Like,
yeah. Yeah, he came off the bench. That's what's his name? Kevin something. I don't know. At Cuse Waterboy. Hell of a game by our guards, JJ, Mintz, and of course Copeland with the buzzer beater and a dog pile into the crowd. The committee doesn't care that it takes a buzzer beater, to beat the lesser team, but they care when you lose it. Keep building and stacking those dubs. I still think that Miami's got a really good shot to be better in the ACC. I know that it's not looking great for them right now, and they really needed to have that game. And you've got Omer out, so and I wasn't wearing a boot or anything, so expect him back. And like Joe said, last thing we want to do is play them again with him, because I don't know if you saw him sitting on the bench there, but he's a giant dude. So
he's not like tall, but he. I mean, he's 6'7", 240.
He's strong.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Very good around the basket, too.
And he can shoot. He's got a jumper. So, anyway, when that was announced at the beginning of the game, I was like, oh, my gosh, let's go. Let's take advantage of that. And we still struggled. So, anyway. So,
top fan Jesse, he's got a couple comments. He's got 1, 2, and 3. So I'm going to read 1, which is a question, but I'm going to read 2 and 3, and then we could just hit up 1. He says, I assume GMAC is the shooting coach. If so, he's done a phenomenal job this year. Brown, Q, and JJ have improved their shooting tremendously. Hopefully he can work with JT and get him going soon. What are y'all thoughts on benching JT until we play an easier team, like let's say Louisville, and then playing him like 35 minutes to try and get him going? That's the question. And then his other 2 comments. Number 2 was banging the Cope drum all last year. He's super fun to watch. He will be my next jersey I buy. And number 3, I think Coach Boeheim said something like combo guards are just guards that aren't good enough to be point guards. Glad to see Judah turning into a point guard and starting to facilitate.
Yeah, the facilitating is, we talked about it. I'm not going to get into it again, but he's done a tremendous job, and that's his backup plan. But the better he gets at that, that's just going to be another layer of what he can do, even when he can get inside. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's just making himself better when he can't do exactly what he wants to do, and he lacked that last year. He was doing the Tyus Battle, carry the team on the shoulders type stuff last year.
But some of that also too is your teammates. If your teammates aren't moving too,
I mean, true. It was lazy. Yeah.
Even in the beginning of this year, there was times in some games where you saw a lot of people just standing around watching Judah and not really moving without the ball. And obviously I feel like their offense and some players' confidences in being able to score in certain ways have gone up, and we've obviously gotten better offensively. And, you know, just the way that he can go and score 10 points in a game, shoot 3 of 13, but still have 13 assists, damn near a triple double. You know, that's you're seeing him mature and grow as a player as well. So,
yeah.
Oh no, we see it. Like I said, we see the growth every game.
In X Spaces over here, Nadal says, "Let's go Pitt." He must have said that after we talked about them beating Duke. But yeah, I can't, Nadal, go there, bud. I can't go there. as much as I hate Duke, you'll never hear me say, "Let's go Pitt." It might be one of those weird situations where it has to come down to that at some point. I don't even know if I'll say it then. But my gosh, I mean. I hate Pitt, and I hate Boston College. I hate Notre Dame, and that's my hate bundle right there. You'll never catch me saying that, but good win for Pitt. And good on them for waxing that ass, because
no, at this point, it don't matter.
Yeah,
I hope Pitt wins as many as they want.
That's true.
We've already played them twice.
Exactly.
It's only going to make us look better.
Right, exactly. And they're ahead of us in the net somehow. I guess that Duke win just throttled them forward. By the way, let's see how – let's just real quick. Let's see how many that throttled them forward. They went from 82 to 68 after that Duke win in the net.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of big time. Oh, so the question, you know, I'm not real sure about benching JT just yet, but I'm telling you right now that it's probably being thought about.
Not being thought about, then I don't think that I would question our coaches if it wasn't being thought about.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where what is he doing in practice? You know, we've questioned decisions before, and like you said, it doesn't come down to who starts, because mm-hmm. you can start and play at the most maybe 4 minutes, right? Unless there's a timeout called. So it doesn't matter. I mean, he can get to start and go out there and see what he can do, but you know, it's going to be coming down to you know, someone deserving some more time. And you know, you've got all kinds of things going on at center too, which is the bigger issue. But I mean, I'm just waiting for him to come out. He had that one game. Was it the game against Colgate that he was really good? I can't remember. There was one game earlier this year where he was really good, but that was it. And it was obviously a little bit forgettable because I don't even remember what game it was. What else did he have?
That was it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, he was just asking about benching, you know, Justin Taylor.
Okay. Well, what about Florida State then? What do we think? The all-time series between the Seminoles and the Orange sits at 10-6 in favor of Syracuse. Syracuse, they've taken the last two and three of the last four. Last year, 76-67, win with Mintz, Gerard, Edwards, Bell, and Brown. And you're starting five, Gerard with 26 points and Edwards with 12 rebounds. The Syracuse Orangemen and Florida State Seminoles first met in 1990. The Orange won the first three games in the series. The Seminoles would beat Syracuse in the first round of the 1997 NIT tournament. The two teams would not meet again for 17 years until Syracuse joined the ACC in the 13-14 season. The unranked Orange would upset number 6 Florida State in January of 2017 with Gillen. A 21-point game, 11 assists, and Tyler Lydon, strong defense, gave the team 6 blocks and 11 rebounds and led Syracuse to the victory. All of that, according to orangehoops.org. The Noles are sitting at 11-7, 5-2 in the ACC. They're currently on a 5-game win streak, in those 5 games, they all came from the ACC. They were Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Notre Dame, and Miami. So they suffered an 11-point loss at home yesterday to Clemson. I watched a good chunk of that game. It was pretty. It was a good battle as far as I could see. And then I figured Florida State was going to handle it, but they didn't. The rotation for FSU is extremely deep. This is one thing that's they're going to have a lot of fresh legs out there. They got 12 guys that are averaging at least 10 minutes plus a game. So. They're led by Jameer Watkins, transfer from VCU. This is first year with the Seminoles, 6'7" junior forward. He leads FSU in points per game with 13.2, rebounds at 5.8, assists at 3.1, and steals at 1.5. So he's 14-48 from three. And that's good enough for 29.2%. Darren Green, junior, he's the guy that they've got behind the arc. He's averaging 12.3 points a game. He's 42.5% from the floor, but 40.4% from three. He's a fifth-year senior. It's his second year with Florida State after transferring from USF. And he's also leading the team in average minutes per game with 31. So he gets a lot of playing time. And Primo Spears is 6'3 guard. He started a little bit late this year. He had due to an injury, but he's still averaging 11.4 points, and he's been coming on lately. His career started with Duquesne, and then he went to Georgetown, and now he's with Florida State. So,
yeah, I remember from Georgetown.
Yeah, he's found a home at Florida State, but I thought there was a double transfer rule. But I mean, I guess coach left Georgetown, so he could probably get an exemption there. Okay. Those are the only guys averaging double digits per game in the scoring column. But like I said, they got 12 guys. As a team, they're shooting 43.9% from the floor, 69.2% from the line, and 32.6% from three. I'm going to go back real quick. That game in 2017, what's funny is I was just thinking about that as I mentioned it. We covered that. That's how stupid long we've been around is I remember that game, and we actually covered that game here on the show. So that's weird that was in the history of that. So anyway, Joe, a deep team, they're going to be able to keep some fresh legs. Like I talked about earlier, Syracuse kind of running a 7-man rotation right now. And that's one worry, but obviously Darren Green Jr. is a worry, but the way that Syracuse has been able to protect the arc, I feel like that's not really a huge concern of mine anymore, and because they've done such a good job, and plus they really only have Darren Green from behind the arc, so this team has been really good, Florida State, and they've been questionably not so good. So it's kind of depends on what team shows up, and us having home court advantage, I got to imagine that, you know, that bodes well for us. So what do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, being at home, obviously we're undefeated there this year. So that, you know, gives you a little bit better of a feeling when it comes down to that. But, you know, those are like the most consistent guys, right? Darren Green, Jameer Watkins, like you spoke about, you know, those are the most consistent guys. Primo Spears has been pretty good off the bench. But, you know, they got, like you said, guys all over the place. You know, Deontay Green is also in the starting lineup. He's a 6'9 sophomore, along with Baba Miller, who's 6'11, who he's got the third most three-pointers as a 6'11 guy made for their team. So they're bigger than a lot of the teams that we have played, you know, in the ACC. And they also have, you know, between Jalen Gainey, which is a graduate transfer from Brown, and Cam Corin, and Taylor Bowen, like those are three guys that are 6'10 coming off the bench. So again, not having Naheem and not having a steady, confident group of centers that can come in and you know that you have the height advantage and that you can compete. You know, Malik Brown's going to have to stay out of foul trouble. Benny Williams and some of the other guys are going to have to play a lot bigger than what they are. And, yeah, that's really kind of my only worry. They don't really – like you said, they only have a couple guys that are three-point shooters. My worry is the aggressive defense that they'll play with, you know, all the subs kind of just like us, but the size as well. So,
well,
rebounding is really, really a big – rebounding, and we need some key guys to stay out of foul trouble if we want to be able to – continue to be undefeated at home.
I mean,
this year.
You'd have to imagine that you're going to have to get Ahima, or you're going to have to get maybe even Peter Carey in there to get some height on some of this, because you don't want Malik Brown down there getting himself in foul trouble. If he gets in foul trouble early, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
You can recover against Pitt. You can recover against Miami, but probably not here. I mean, just like the same, you know, there's a couple other teams. You know, I mean, you look at Clemson, you wouldn't be able to do it there either. So those are the ones I worry about. So, yeah, rebound's going to be a factor. Obviously, I should have thought about that, but I didn't. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough one.
To me, that's one of the biggest ones.
They've been beat, and obviously pretty much everybody has, but they went on a 5-game win streak in the ACC. So, Wake Forest being one of them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the best team they played there. But that's not easy to do. And three of those were on the road. Or, no, excuse me, two of those were on the road. Three of them were at home. The first three were at home. Two were on the road. So,
right.
But they did lose at home to Clemson. Clemson beat them at home. So, anyway. It's going to be interesting, but, you know, this is going to be a good test for Syracuse. I feel like you said, you know, you look at this game, Joe, and you look at NC State coming up, and if we could take one of these games, I'm going to be happy.
And
I guess probably the best chance would be Florida State. So,
yeah, I mean,
they're both home games for us, though.
Yeah, they're both home games for us. Both these teams are 5-2. They were 5-1, so I mean, they both lost yesterday, and I'm probably sure that they're ready to get back to their winning ways. You know, Florida State is just—they're tough to gauge at 11-7 overall because you know they went through, you know, a 4-game losing stretch, and you know they had that game where they, you know, lost by 21, you know, at Florida, and they lost to Lipscomb. So, but when I look at them and their team and, you know, their defensive ranks and analytics and their offense, then we both of our teams look very, very similar type teams, except for, you know, they're a little bit bigger. But at the same time, they have kind of more bad losses. You know, I don't think we have a bad loss. So,
Besides the height, though, they've really got three main guys that are really good. You take out the height, and you're looking at three guys.
Right, but the reason why I bring it up so much and part of it is because of, you know, the 19 offensive rebounds that North Carolina had, the 15 offensive rebounds that Pittsburgh had. Like, you know, that height can
give them
second opportunities, right? Yeah. They can get points, get a rebound around the basket and maybe get an easy putback. So it's that kind of stuff that I worry about more than that. You know, I don't think that they have a whole bunch of guys that are going to be, you know, 7 foot and got a post game that's going to make Malik Brown look dumb. But if they could play two or three guys and they're all kind of the same size as Malik and we got to try to match up with that, then sometimes that's difficult. And we've proven to give up some offensive rebounds against teams that are a little bit bigger. So, otherwise, I think we're very comparable. I think in the analytics, when you look at the net and you look at KenPom, we're still ranked higher than them. I'm sure that's because of some of their bad losses. But it seems like you said, their five-game win streak, and, you know, they lost to a good Clemson team who was trying to chomp at the bit to try to get a win because they probably didn't think they should have lost to Georgia Tech the other day. But Florida State is getting better. And, you know, you spoke of Primo Spears having an injury and a couple other guys. You know, they were shorthanded early on, and now I think they're starting to get their flow and you know, who plays with what and their lineups together, and they're playing a lot better. So.
All right, well, it's that time, Joe. They're playing better, yeah. They're playing better, is all I'm saying. Yeah. It's that time.
You know, you must have won.
Well, yeah, we said we weren't going to keep track, but I did. I had 78-75. So I had the spread on. I just had the score off. I wish I would have said Copeland with a 3 at the buzzer. That would have been some shit, right? Yeah. You had 81-74 Syracuse. Yeah. David says, did you already talk about watching the game on your phone at the kid's birthday party? Let me tell you about how agonizing that birthday party was. It was supposed to be laser tag in a park. Well, yesterday was freezing. And this is a wide open park with water on the water in the back. And wind was just whipping off there. So what we ended up doing, I only met these people once. My wife was working. What they ended up doing is saying, okay, well, we'll play laser tag in the house. And so I was the only one there that didn't know anybody. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how awkward would it be if I just sat on this couch and watched this game on my phone? Because I really have nothing else to do anyway. So I'm trying to mingle. And the whole time I'm like, you know what? If I can get away from here and watch this game on my phone, then I can just hide in a corner. No one will ever know. But it was way too awkward to try because it wasn't like one of those birthday parties. It was like a birthday party somewhere, like Apex or one of these laser tag joints. It would have been totally different, but it wasn't. It was at someone's house. So it sucked, bro. It sucked. It was from 11 to 1. And I said to myself, well, I'm out of here at 1. I told Cole, I'm like, yo, bud, we're out of here. 1 o'clock. We're done. Nope. 1:30. Pissed. Anyways, it was the first time in a very long time I did not go even check the phone for the score, which I do sometimes. But I did not want anything ruined for me. So I basically shut my notifications off when I got home and just watched it. But it was nice. I know why you do it now, Joe. You are late to everything anyway. Even
I'm gonna be late to my funeral.
Even an SU game, but I will say though, it is nice going in the YouTube TV library, pulling that bitch up, and just being able to fast forward everything and get to all the action at once, and not have to worry about waiting around. So, and fast forwarding halftime was tremendous. So,
yes, absolutely.
Okay, let's see. I digress. Look, until Syracuse drops an egg at home, badly, that is, I'm still going to have faith in the home game thing because I feel like it's helped them a lot. I think they you got those guys out there. They feed off of these fans. Man, you can tell, dude. you could tell how hyped. I mean, especially Quiet Ear. I mean, I keep going to Quiet Ear because he's so animated about everything all the time, you know. And there's probably nothing like it for these guys. So I'm gonna pick a win now. You know, minus the rebounds, which is Joe's scared me on. I'm gonna say 73, and I don't know if we win that battle, but if we can keep it close, I think we can win the game because they're not like a high scoring team. They're in the high 70s, right? So I mean, and Miami was in like 83. They averaged like 83 points a game coming into this game, and we held them to 69. So I'm gonna say 73. 65, Syracuse. And I think they kind of cruise to victory. It's probably going to play the foul game a little bit, something like that. What do you think, Joe?
Okay, well, I think actually the opposite. I think we're both on opposite sides of the spectrum from this game to the last game. I think it's a little bit, you know, around the same score, but I think it's going to be closer. I do agree with you. I hope. I mean, we're on ESPN2. The students are back. It's 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Tuesday.
Right, on a Tuesday. So hopefully we can get something, you know, around 20 there again. And, you know, hopefully the fans and the students will be loud for ESPN. And so, you know, it comes, you know, off the TV good. But also, too, I want to look at – there's a lot of times where I thought, you know, yeah, it was loud, but I thought it could have been louder. And I think that – there's certain times where, you know, sometimes the players need to, and I don't think it should be like this, but I'm just saying, you know, put
hoist
your
it
arms up,
hoist
try
it
to
up,
get the
yeah.
fans right, try to get yeah. them a little bit more hyped. Like
you Joe know, Girard used to do that a lot,
right? Yeah, a lot. But I think Buddy used to do it too, right? So like, and you know, the thing is that you know, you get a good game, you get a good entertaining game, the fans are into it. If you do that, then they're gonna listen. You know, you look off to the fan, you know, the crowd or whatever, and you start putting your arms up, trying to get them going. It's not like they're just going to sit there and look at you like you're crazy. You know what I mean? They're gonna start cheering for them.
Right.
So, you know, I'm looking for that to you know players to get, because they play well enough, you know, obviously, and exciting enough to keep the fans in it. But sometimes, you know, some people need a little extra push. And yeah. I think that there's definitely a little extra, you know, decibel we can go here. In that dome and be a little bit louder. But no, I think it's going to be a little bit closer. I think the Seminoles, they play real tough defense like us. You know, they're physical. I think it's going to be a tough physical game. I think it's going to be closer on the end of still picking Syracuse win, but Syracuse 71, Florida State 69.
Okay. Well, it's close to the score yesterday. And I had 71 at first too. I didn't know what I was going to pick for Florida State, but I had 71 at first too. And I'm like, wow, he scored 72 yesterday. So anyway, okay, what was I going to say? Oh, the crowd, right? So the game starts, okay, and I think Florida State
we clapped for 5 minutes.
Not Florida State. It was 3 minutes, but it felt like five. It might have felt like 10 if you're doing it. And then the one broadcaster goes, and now the fans can finally sit down. it's like what everybody's thinking. It's like, now they can sit down. Like, it's not how it should go. I know David loves it. I know David loves the stand and clap. But golly, man. Time to ditch the stand and clap. And I wish I had more clout, because I would definitely start a something to stop the stand and clap and come up with something else. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, what if we do the opposite?
That's what I'm saying, right?
Like, sit down and be quiet till we hit the first shot, and then as soon as we hit the first shot, then stand up and start cheering, and then don't sit down for a little while.
The rest of the half. No.
For the rest
or as soon as it's
for the
tipped,
first 5 minutes.
As soon as it's tipped, you make as much noise as you possibly can, especially all right, here, missed opportunity. Air ball yesterday. We got an air ball one time. It was clear. One time. Okay? You do that anywhere else in the league, in the conference. And every time that player touches the ball, it's going to be a clear unanimous, airball. Like, let's get on that program. Let's get on that program. I don't know what it's going to take. I know it's probably difficult to corral 20,000 people into doing the same thing and learning what to do. But by God, man, it's freaking time to have some damn tradition started and do some of these things that are, you sit at home, you watch 20 kids in the zoo shout airball, and it just makes your blood boil. What about 20,000? Let's do it. Let's something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I mean, it's the clap is, I mean, half the people stand up and they don't even clap, right? And then no one knows how to keep it in cadence. So you're always like, you know, and it's a half-assed clap, and then people start speeding it up, and then you're like off, and then you got to like start over again, you know, and it's just not even that loud.
It's like, weird to clap, I mean, it's just, and then go, yay, and then sit down. It's just
it's like, oh, you've done enough. Now I'm going to sit on my hands for the next 8 minutes. I don't know.
Because
it's just one of those things where it's like, I mean, I've been there, right? Where it's like one of those things where you're sitting there and you're like, why am I clapping? Like, we're not playing good. We've sat here for four straight minutes. We're in the under 16 timeout. We still haven't, you know what I mean? Like, there's been times where
It's been bad.
And you're standing and you're clapping and it's like, dude, I mean, you're tiring out the crowd before the game even starts. Yeah, they're all standing and they're, well, I mean.
The players. Think about the players. Like, do you ever think a player has ever thought, my God, sit down. Sit down already. Okay?
You're making me nervous. Making I don't even know what you're clapping
this
about.
This is too much freaking pressure. Nothing's happened and you're clapping. Stop. I'm sure. Anyway. All right.
I just wonder. I know it's rant. It's a rant, but like, it's like, I always wonder if there's people that think that stuff. Like, if there's students that show up to the game and they're like, why would have an open conversation. Like, why do we do this? Like, this doesn't even make any sense. Oh, it's just part of the tradition. But
the change would have to start in the student section. This change has to start with Otto's Army. They could change it.
Well, they'd have to make something. Like, what's the matter with just starting the game, just watching and just cheering when something good happens?
Imagine that. I don't know. Like, I don't know. What would we do?
Because
what do I do with my hands?
Like, you need to like come up with something different to do from the beginning now, because if you don't, then all the old heads are going to be like, well, I guess we're clapping again, right? Like, we're doing this thing. So, like, I mean, I don't know. It's weird because, like I said, I'm a diehard fan. I love going to those games. But there's times where I'm like, I feel forced in the beginning of the game to stand. And you're clapping, and sometimes you're not clapping at a good product. And then they finally do score, and you're like, ah, about time. And you sit down. Finally, I can sit down. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's.
You feel forced, Joe, because you are. You either don't do it, or you're that asshole that's sitting down, and everybody's wondering, why is this guy sitting down?
What does he not know? Hey, bud.
It's like,
you know what the deal is? You know what time it is? Like,
if you're not in a wheelchair, then you should be standing up, right? I mean,
right. I don't know. I don't know how you end that.
I'm going to tell you what right now, man. It's going to end. I just don't know how. It'll happen.
I think we need somebody to just show up. Just take a damn, right in the beginning of the game, right, a microphone right in the middle of the damn court. Be like, hey, we're ending it today. We're not going to do this anymore.
Something. Yeah. I mean, it's what it's going to have to come down to. It's the student section is the only entity that could do it.
I mean, I just, like, it's to your point, though. Like, all the thing, like, airball every single time, right? I mean, there was times, wasn't it Pittsburgh, when they would, like, look things up about people and they would, like, yell things at, like, the free throw line and stuff?
It was Duke. It's Duke still. They are maybe not as much as they used to, but they used to scout the other team. That was the one they had that started the Trevor Cooney autographed a picture for his girlfriend.
Oh yeah,
remember?
Yeah,
that was Duke. That was Duke's student section. And hats off to them for that, because it's just that stuck with Trevor Cooney to right now. I mean, I'm talking about it. So. Right. You know, they used to look up things about the players and they had different, they would do different things every time a player did something or missed a shot or went to the foul line, and they would yell things. And it takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of collaboration to do. But I mean, that's what a student section's supposed to do. You know, we've talked about the zoo and back in the day, how really obnoxious they were just with their volume alone. And then the airball stuff, you know, started a few years ago, and whoever touched the ball and that spread. I mean, Pitt's the first team I remember doing that, the airball, and just following the player every time they touched the ball. So,
right. I mean, I get it.
There's just no effort put into it sometimes for us, I feel like. They just feel like 20,000 people is going to be loud
enough.
It's
not even the student section. It's like, this is crap that fans that from the community know. So the student section could stop. Everyone else in the 300s, they're still going to do it unless they're told. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would be like, oh.
Well, how do you get an orange out, Joe? How do you get an orange out? It's promoted.
You obviously don't go to social media.
But that's how you get an orange out. That's on tickets. Yeah, it was supposed to be an orange out yesterday. I think it's on tickets, by the way, if I remember right. I know. That's the other thing. So it's a bad example. But
yeah, we're not good at taking directions, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, you want an answer for me on how it happens, I would have to say the student section needs to get organized and need to do something. And like I said, the whole scouting report of the players would take a ton of effort. It's not even what I'm looking for. I'm just looking for something.
I mean, just
obnoxious.
The psychology.
By the way,
it, you know,
where they put our students, right? Exactly. But where they put our students is piss poor, and that again comes down to the design of the actual facility that they're in, because they're on a football field.
Right.
So there's a lot. There's a huge buffer there on most sides, except for, you know, they push the court right up against there and everything. But you know, how do you line it? You know, how do you get the students closer? Like what Duke does. They line the whole floor with them. We've talked about it 100 times. There's different dynamics, though, is my point, that go into being obnoxious. And one of them is placement of the students. And our students aren't placed in the right spot.
No, they're not. And I think that the football, actually, I read something about football taking care of that. I think that Fran Brown's making the change to where the student section's going to be down beyond, I think, but behind a goalpost in one of the end zones. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be changing that, seeing how that works. But yeah, I mean, realistically, even that psychology of it, if you want to look at it and think about it in logic, I mean, think about it. We are standing up and clapping before anything is even done. Before anything.
Twice. Twice
right,
a game.
Right. Twice a game we're doing this, right? And at the end of the day, we're motivating our fans to sit down and to stop cheering. Like, if you really think about it, right? You ever think of players like, I don't know if I want to make a shot, because as soon as I make a shot, these guys are just going to sit down and be quiet. It's just, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, we're motivating our fans to be like, oh, finally, sit down. And now we're just sitting on our hands for the next freaking half. It's a close in the second half, and we might get a little fired up.
Have you ever been to a game or watched a game? I'd say both for me, where when you sat down, you were relieved, or that when you were watching it, when they sat down, you were like, finally. Like not just the shot, but finally. They're done.
Yeah, right.
You know, it goes on so long sometimes that the announcers take notice, and like, the crowd's still standing and clapping because Syracuse hasn't scored yet. It's like, well, that's weird. Why are they standing
and
clapping
and
not scoring?
Like, my arms are going to fall off. What is going on?
People are passing out.
You make a shot. Can we count free throws? Can we count free throws?
yeah, right?
No.
Exactly. No, we can't count free throws. That's not fair. No. It's come down to that, too, before.
I don't like this game. This game isn't fun anymore.
It's not fun anymore. It was fun maybe back in the day. It was something unique.
How about this?
But
I'll sit down and I'll get up and cheer when they make a basket.
It's a really good idea.
You know, maybe even when the other team's on offense, I'll maybe scream and be a little loud.
Yeah, I think opening tip, the other team gets the ball in the opening tip. They just need to be loud, period. You know.
Because we're cheering for him.
Yeah.
Because we're technically clapping even when the other team has the ball.
Yeah, maybe.
Until we make a basket.
Like I said, like we've said, reverse it. But either way, we'll see what we can do. There's got to be more people than us that hate it, but there's a lot of people like David out there who love it.
I just think that there's a better logical answer. Like when you really start to break down,
I'm just kidding, David. David hates it, by the way. He already told me.
What are the benefits? Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, what are the benefits when you really start to break it down logically, psychologically, all that stuff? What are the benefits?
There's not a benefit that I've seen, but it's just tradition. I guess if they're trying to have tradition, they're just, it was one of those things. Like, what other tradition is there? And I'm not bagging. I am kind of bagging.
It's also things too. It's like there's been times where I've been like, we've gotten there. It's late. You know what I mean? Like the game's about to start. You want to grab your, you know,
your dome beers
and you know, some nachos and this and that, you know, and you get up there and you want to just sit down and watch the game and maybe eat your nachos or something. But it's like, oh, nope. Got to stand up and clap as my nachos get cold. I mean, I just, I've had some experience. Like, there's been times where I've been like, screw this. What, are the dome police going to come and escort me out because I'm not clapping?
Hey, man, stand up. Stand up, man. Usually they're telling me to sit down when I go to the dome.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They'll tell you to stand up because you're not clapping and this and that. Then they'll sit down for the rest of the game. Meanwhile, I lose my voice by the fourth quarter. Yeah,
exactly. And then, you know, they're telling you to sit down. They can't see. It's like...
Yeah. Then they're yelling at me because I'm screaming. I'm all crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a podcast in itself. I think we're way over our allotted time for the month. So, holy cow, dude. Yes, we are. Golly. Okay. All right. We got to go fast.
Dude, you still got 2.5 hours before your team plays their playoff game.
Let's go Buffalo, David. Where's my Bills fans at?
It doesn't matter. Whoever wins, losing next week.
Look, there's very few teams I hate more than Kansas City. So.
Okay. Fair.
That's where my head's at right now, and it's fine. Whoever deals with Baltimore will deal with Baltimore. Hopefully, it's the Bills.
Not too many teams have dealt well with Baltimore.
I know. That quarterback there, he's something else, huh?
Yeah, he's pretty good. Anyway, NFL's already leaked it, right?
Did they? What are you talking about? The color thing?
Well, there was the color thing, and then there was something else somewhere. Some that announced that, like, whoever was going to be singing during the Super Bowl.
Oh, was it Reba McEntire?
Reba McEntire, yeah. And Usher and someone else will be singing during the San Francisco-Baltimore Super Bowl.
Oh, shut up. That did not happen, did it?
I mean, it's out there on social media, not to say that it wasn't. Like,
I don't know, man.
You know how all that stuff is.
Politics is rigged. Freaking sports is rigged. What do we got left? What do we got left after that?
Nothing. We're just living in a Truman Show, man. Pay your taxes.
Is this the Matrix? What the hell? Anyway.
Pretty much.
Okay, well. As long as Syracuse wins championships anytime soon, then yeah. I guess it's okay. I don't know. Okay. All right. That's going to do it for us, everybody. We appreciate the hell out of you, especially those of you inside the spaces. All right. Who hung
Syracuse
in there?
Women, 16-2.
16-2. Okay. So
they took
Pitt. Look for them to be ranked tomorrow. And if they're not, then. Someone should say something about that, because that ain't right. For Joe, Sean, Ralph.